The title of this presentation is How to Be a Fit Christian. Interestingly, folks who don't get enough exercise, who are unfit, undertrained, underconditioned, and unhealthy, have a lot in common with those folks who get too much exercise, who are overtrained, overstrained, overconditioned, and overstressed. So what we're going to do, I have an overhead to show you what we will be covering today in this presentation. Okay. The first question, why should you exercise? You walkers, joggers, swimmers, dancers, gardeners, whatever your choice of exercise is, what is that exercise doing for you physically? Some of the physical benefits of it: it builds a strong heart, reduces blood pressure, reduces total blood cholesterol, it increases your high density lipoproteins, which is the good cholesterol, it decreases the impact of alcohol on the system, decreases the impact of smoking on the system, and makes the skin look better. Can you think of any other physical benefits that you have experienced through physical exercise? You sleep better. It's very good for weight control.
But a sense of well-being.
And that's good. That goes into our next, I'm glad you brought that up, that because that takes us into the next part of fitness, where it improves our mental health and stress reduction. During the day, I seem to get hassled. I have three children, and it's constant energy, constant motion, constant noise, and creates stress for me. What exercise has done for me, it gives a sense, teaches independence, gives me a sense of being in charge of me. Sometimes during the day I don't feel like I have control over a lot of situations, but during that time I have a sense of control. Gives me a sense of freedom. The National Institute of Mental Health in 1984 came to a consensus concerning exercise, physical fitness, and mental health. The results of this were: exercise improves mental health and well-being, it is an adjunct in managing severe depression, it decreases moderate depression and anxiety, it reduces neuromuscular tension, resting heart rate, and stress hormones. Ken Cooper did a study on children and teenagers, and he found that students who were tested on the 12-minute run walk, those students who could run 1.7 miles or greater had an average grade point average of 2.9. Those students who ran less than a mile on the average had a grade point average of 1.9. a statistic that they accumulated there. It also reduces neuromuscular tension, resting heart rate, and certain stress hormones. What have been some of your experiences here? How has your physical activity, whether it's walking, running, gardening, helped your mental health, helped in stress reduction? Anybody want to add to that? Okay. In my house, doesn't seem to be a quiet moment from 6 in the morning until 10 at night. And I know when I don't run, my kids start getting on my nerves. I get flustered. I'm bothered by the small things. I know if I can get out for that run, I feel a sense of peace during one point of the day. Has anybody experienced that same feeling? Anybody want to add to that? Spiritually, there is another dimension to my daily run. For me, running has been my exercise of choice because it takes less time. And when I achieved a certain level of fitness, walking just did not get my heart rate up high enough, and I wasn't working hard. But on my daily run, it becomes my time to think. It's my time to think. It's my time to pray. In a household like mine, it never seems to have a quiet moment to just sit and meditate. And on my run, it takes me off into a thought process. When I was teaching, I found that I came up with some of my better teaching ideas because there was so much that was being released, so much tension was being released, that I could really relax. It's my time to become centered and get in touch with that part of me that connects me with God. And it's a time, and I don't think of any other time during the day where I'm totally at peace. I realize some people can do that through their occupation, through recreation, but for me, it's through my exercise that I come to that centeredness. Has anybody else experienced anything similar that you'd like to share?
It doesn't necessarily happen when I exercise, but exercising allows me to reach that point better, I think, afterward, or because I'm more fit, maybe, in terms of spiritual things.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. The next point we're going to talk about is achieving optimal fitness. We talk about people going on exercise plans. I'd like to discuss with how we can achieve optimum levels of fitness. The number one area that we do talk about is cardiovascular fitness and cardiovascular health. It means the heart, lungs, and blood vessels working together efficiently. How do you go about making that happen? It's by working aerobically. Does anybody here know what aerobic means? I would like to explain.
Exercise of the heart?
It exercise of the heart, yes.
With oxygen.
And to be with oxygen, that means it needs to be steady and nonstop. I have it down the visual here. Steady and nonstop, a minimum of 20 minutes, working the heart at 60 to 80% of the maximum heart rate. What does that mean, working the heart at 60 to 80% of the maximum heart rate? The heart has to be in it to be considered aerobic, and we need to use our large muscles. Let's take a minute here to discuss some of physical activities that fit into this category. We've talked about running, jogging, walking. What are some other things people do that are considered aerobic?
Ride
a
stationary bicycle.
Stationary biking?
Swimming.
Dance. Dancing, aerobic dance. Okay. Conducting an orchestra? Okay.
Jumping rope.
There's stair climbing, hiking. There's not a better place to hike than right here. To improve fitness, you need to do something aerobic 4 times a week or more. To maintain your current fitness level, you need to do something that is aerobic 3 times a week. I think we talked about, you're talking about maximum heart rate, and how do you find your maximum heart rate? There are a way of doing this. This is a very simple way of doing it. You take the number 220, subtract your age, and you get a number, and then you take 60 to 80% of that. There are also more complicated formulas that you can figure out that you might need some help in figuring it out with a fitness consultant or with your physician or through reading. But for the matter of the purpose in here, that is an easy way to figure out a target heart rate. It's within a range. The other way of telling if you're working too hard or if you're at the right range of exercising cardiovascularly is the TOC test. Have any of you heard what the TOC test is? Okay. When you're walking and you're just starting out on an exercise, if you're just starting out on an exercise program, you're walking up hills, hiking, and you start breathing really hard. And if you start gasping for air, that means you're working too hard. If you can carry on a normal conversation with your breathing somewhat labored, but not to the point of gasping for air, you're probably working within the right range. If you're gasping for air, you're having trouble breathing, you're probably exceeding that 80% 80% of your maximum heart rate, and that you're working too hard to be working in cardiovascularly. I have a comparison that I would like to share with you on comparisons of exercise with energy expenditures. And people are looking at trying to fit in time. How much exercise do you need? Walking, it takes 45 minutes 5 times per week. If you're a jogger, it takes 30 minutes 3 to 5 times per week. To achieve that same energy expenditure and level of fitness for that week, it would take 180 holes of golf. Many of you don't play golf. That's 10 rounds of golf. Golf takes a lot of time. I figured, I know when I talk to my in-laws, they play golf, and they go, and I've run marathons, and they go, how can you run a marathon? It takes 4 hours. Well, it takes me longer than 4 hours to play 18 holes of golf the way I play. That's, but it takes a lot of time to play golf. If person has that much time to play 180 holes of golf, they're probably in very good shape and they're probably very relaxed if they can take that amount of time. It takes 7 hours of single tennis. The reason for the 7 hours of single tennis is there's a lot of stop and go in tennis. So, but to achieve the same amount of aerobic conditioning, you may want to look at that when you start establishing your exercise program. Yes?
How does swimming compare with jogging?
I have some charts that I will be handing out. Swimming is excellent. And I'll check that out. But you don't need to swim as long. You're using more muscle groups in swimming. People that are starting out, it is an excellent source of aerobic exercise. It, again, needs to be steady and nonstop for that 20 minutes. And it's overall a better conditioner for your overall body. I'm sure I have the same comparisons on another chart that I will be handing out, a different, and so you'll be able to read that and look it up on your own. This is keep me in time. The next thing I like to discuss is flexibility. In the simple tasks of everyday living, we often use our bodies in strained or awkward ways, creating stress and tension. We have all experienced muscle aches, stress, tension, soreness, and some of us even injuries due to lack of flexibility in the various muscle groups. A major area of concern is a lack of flexibility in the lower back and muscles in the buttocks and thighs. Have any of you ever experienced tension in those areas in your body? Okay. Just to demonstrate a very simple exercise. We just sit on our chairs. And I'm doing this for a couple reasons. One is to show a correct stretching technique, but also that you don't have to be extremely flexible to stretch and feel like you're doing something for your body. And you can do this anywhere. And the idea is you don't want to do any jerking, any bouncing as you stretch. All you do is just lean forward and drop your head down and just relax those arms down and just relax. And see if your head drops down, see if you feel some kind of stretch in the back of those legs. And just take, breathe, and you want to hold it for about 20 seconds or more. How many of you feel, and this is to show that you can do this at any time. How many of you felt some pull in the back of those, in the back of your thighs? Okay. And at that point, you want to feel a nice, gentle stretch. You want it to be relaxed, and you don't want to overstress or overstrain. When people stretch, and sometimes even I've seen it done in aerobics classes where people are bouncing forward, and you stretch the muscle and you tighten it, stretch and tighten, and you're not achieving the full stretch, the full range of motion that you want to achieve in stretching. Stretching, you need to take your time. I have a set of stretching exercises that I'm going to hand out to you at the end. It is, it's called Everyday Stretches, and it takes about 10 to 15 minutes a day. If you set aside that amount of time daily, it will allow you to offset the accumulated stress, tension, and tightness in your muscles, so you can use your body with greater ease. But I will pass those out towards the end. Again, if you have any questions regarding stretching and flexibility, I am here until July 18th, and I'd be glad to talk with you at any time, go over any of those exercises if you have questions, or if you have any questions concerning any parts of your body that you'd like to make more flexible. Another area is in your upper back, upper neck area. There's some very simple stretches. And would like some kind of instruction on how to do things, how to do stretching correctly, be more than happy to discuss that with you. Next is body composition. Back in 1973, when I had graduated from Pacific Lutheran University, I was a physical education major, and I was overweight. I was fat. I weighed about 130 pounds, and so I started jogging, and it was strictly to lose weight. I didn't like the way I looked. I felt bad, and if I took that same 130 pounds, I probably had about 15 pounds of excess fat on my body. I would like to share with you a story about Gandhi. Being that I was a PE teacher and I was out of shape. It's called Practice What You Preach. A story is told about a woman who took her little boy to the great Mahatma Gandhi. "Mahatma Ji, please tell my little boy to stop eating sugar," the woman requested. "Come back in 3 days," said Gandhi. In 3 days' time, the woman and the little boy returned, and Gandhi said to the little boy, "Stop eating sugar." Puzzled, the woman asked, "But why was it necessary for us to return after 3 days? Couldn't you have told my boy to stop eating sugar when we first visited?" "I could not tell him that then," replied Mahatma, "because 3 days ago I was also eating sugar." So I figured, well, if I was going to teach PE, I had to do something about myself. So I did start jogging to lose weight. The reason exercise becomes an important component in weight reduction is that it reduces the percentage of body fat. How many of you have heard the term body fat before? Okay. Okay. Do you know why it is this is important when considering your fitness? Why is it important? Like to share? Okay. Lean body mass is part of our, it includes our bones, muscles, vital organs, blood, etc. in our body. We all have a certain percentage of body fat. Some people have too much, some people have the right amount, some people don't have enough. We need a certain percentage of body fat to protect our vital organs. No one has 0% body fat because our brains are made of fat. So we have to have some. And there was another study done with anorexic women and girls. They when they did autopsies on some anorexics, they found that their percentage of body, they did not die from not having enough fat, because their percentages of body fats sometimes were as high as 12%. And what happened, it was actually, they actually died from losing some of their muscle tissue and losing so much of their body that their hearts became weak and couldn't support their systems. So we do need a certain percentage of body fat. What is considered healthy for men is 12 to 15% body fat is considered healthy for men. For a woman, 22% is considered healthy. Now, and there are people, competitive athletes, go below that amount. And as you get older, it's okay to go above that amount. But if we're looking at the average person, those percentages are considered healthy. To demonstrate this, let's take two 100-pound women. I realize not very many people fit into that category of being 100 pounds, but for a point of reference, it is an easy calculation and it is easy to follow. We'll take two women, they're the same height, say they're 5 feet tall and they weigh 100 pounds. By the weight charts, they're okay. But we take one woman who is 20% fat. That means that person would have 20 pounds of fat on her body and 80 pounds of lean body mass. You take her friend who is 33% body fat. That person has 33 pounds of fat on her and only 67 pounds of lean body mass. Now 33% body fat is considered average for an American woman these days. It's not considered a fit average, but it's an average. Which one's going to look more fit? The person that is 20 pounds of fat or the person that's 33 pounds of fat? Which is going to look better? The person that has 20 pounds. The reason for this is that lean body mass weighs more than fat. Muscle tissue weighs more than fat. You can get, you know, take a big blob of fat and it would be, and you'd have about this much lean body mass compared to a larger amount of fat. And how does one get rid of excess body fat? To build up muscle. And how do we build up muscle? Use it. And we exercise. The most efficient way of getting rid of excess body fat is through aerobic exercise, which we did, you know, discuss when we were talking about cardiovascular aerobic exercise, being steady and nonstop for a minimum of 20 minutes and working the heart at 60 to 80% maximum heart rate. Through aerobic exercise, we can do this, and it is, if we combine it with diet, we'll have an additional effect. It helps to combine weight reduction with diet, but if exercise is not included, that is basically self-defeating. Last January, I started doing some work with the Tacoma School District, doing fitness appraisals and counseling. And my mother had called on the phone and she told me she was going to start another diet. And her previous way of losing weight was to restrict her calorie intake to less than 1,000 calories a day. And that was the only way she could do that. What was happening is she was going on her diet, she wasn't exercising consistently, but she was reducing the calorie, she was slowing down her metabolism, and her body was getting used to surviving on less. So every time she went off a diet, then her weight would go back up. Well, I told her about this exercise program that I was working with, and I said, why don't you give it a try? So I went over with my skin calipers and we measured her body fat. I don't know, have any of you had your body fat measured? Okay, some of you. Now, it can be done in different ways. We have skin calipers. I have some other calipers that I use in a clinical setting, but I brought along just to show you what we do. But what happens, this is a caliper. And you have a little thing here that pinches the amount of body fat on your system. This is one area where we take a measurement off the supra-ilium and one off the thigh. Is one way of doing it. There are other measurements that we can take, but for doing it quickly, we take three. It's and the formula that we use is a formula that is comparable to the 6-7 sites. People that do the 6 and 7 sites, they say is more accurate. But when you're doing a large group of people not having as much time, we find 3 sites, giving people an indication of where their percentage of body fat is. And it gives us within a range. But anyway, I took my calipers over and I did measure my mom's percentage of body fat. And she started walking. You don't need to run to lose body fat. Walking slowly, briskly, whatever. The idea is to just move. She began walking 30 minutes a day and she's now up to 45 minutes a day. No matter if my parents have company at their house, their company goes walking with them. But within 8 weeks, taking the same measurements on her percentage of body fat, her body fat percentage went down 9%. And I took the same measurements, same time of the day, and she looks good. My dad's there to testify for how good she looks now, just by exercising.
Looking better every day. And,
smile.
Yeah. So, but exercise does work. Have any of you, some of you in here have had your body fat measured. There are 4 different ways that I'm aware of that body fat is measured. There might be more. And if any of you have any questions about it, it's something I can discuss with you at lunch or breaks. Skin calipers is one way. We have hydrostatic weighing, which people, they weigh you in a tank of water. Have you done that? Okay, and I've done it both ways. I've had both the skin calipers and the hydrostatic weighing done, and they've all been within 1 to 2%. So, if you want to know more about it, I can explain it to you later or ask during the question and answer period, providing we have time. There's a circumference measurement where you take a tape measure and you measure various parts of your body, and there's a formula to figure out what your percentage of body fat is. And then a newer method is electrical impedance. And again, I have more information on that that I will share either at a later time or during the question and answer period. And that's usually done within a physician's office or a clinic. If you wish to read further on this subject of body fat, I recommend the book Fitter Fat by Covert Bailey. It's fun reading, it's very quick reading, and it gives you a good overview of body composition and aerobic exercise and what aerobic exercise does to you. When I was talking about cardiovascular health, I did not mention any of Ken Cooper's books on aerobics are excellent resources for you to use. They have one aerobics book in the bookstore. You want to go look through it. You're welcome to, you know, borrow these, providing you get them back to me before July 18th, before the time I leave Holden Village. I have lots of resources, and if you do want to know more, I'd be glad to talk to you at breaks. The next two items I am not going to go into in real detail, so we have more time to discuss questions, but they do need to be mentioned. Muscular strength is the ability to exert maximal force against an object or resistance all at once. It is an asset in almost all sports and games. A way to increase your muscular strength is through weight training. We test it through either push-ups or bench presses, but if you do want to increase your muscular strength, you can do it through exercises, but the way that we hear people doing it mostly is through weight training. The other is muscular endurance, and that is the ability to exert force, not necessarily maximal, over an extended period of time. Muscular endurance allows other muscles to work longer and more efficiently. The way we test muscular endurance is through timed curl-ups, and where you have your hands across your chest and you go to a cadence and your knees are bent and you roll up using your abdominal muscles. And it's timed to a cadence. They're slower. It's not the timed number of sit-ups that you do in school, where the people are, you know, they're like bouncing up and they start using their hip flexors rather than their abdominal muscles. That's one way of measuring it. And also people use weight training to increase their muscular endurance. When beginning an exercise program, some people don't know where to begin. They hesitate because they don't have medical information. Some people have been told, well, you can't exercise because of this condition. You shouldn't exercise because of this. Well, the American College of Sports Medicine has some guidelines to follow. And before anybody begins an exercise program, if you have any of these following conditions, you need to coordinate an exercise program with your physician. Or he needs to be involved with it and give you an approval and okay. One is a history of high blood pressure. The American College of Sports Medicine guidelines say 140, if it's higher than 145 over 95. An elevated total cholesterol and HDL ratio above 5. The way that you test your total blood cholesterol is through a blood chemistry analysis. Some physicals, it's routinely done with some physicals in the physician's office. Sometimes now, some employer groups are now doing on-site blood chemistry analysis, where they go right into the work site, take the blood, and then they come back and do and educate the people about what the numbers mean. If you haven't had it done and you're exercising or starting an exercise program, it would be a valuable thing for you to have done. Anybody that smokes cigarettes, when we were working with the Tacoma School District this year, if anybody was a smoker, we had to refer them to a doctor before we could even give them an exercise program. If anybody's ever had an abnormal resting electrocardiogram, you need to see a physician before exercising. There's a family history of coronary heart disease prior to age 50, and diabetes mellitus. Now, if you have any of these conditions, you really need to see a physician first before beginning any kind of exercise program. And it also will help you answer any of your questions. Okay, next. Where do you begin?
When you spoke of cholesterol, you just used the number 5. I'm sure
a ratio.
In the checkup that I had, he used 3 digits in
Thank you for clarifying that. Okay, I'm talking about a ratio. The ratio I'm saying is a 5. Like some people's cholesterol, the total cholesterol may be 200 and their high density lipoprotein count may be 30. And that would give you a ratio above 5. Okay, it is a 3-digit number for your cholesterol reading. We can go back, if we have time, we can go back and discuss cholesterol at the end. Where do you begin to make this change to become physically active and become more fit? The first step, you need to become aware of the importance of exercise. And right now, an awareness in the process is in the process of being created. So right now we're in the process of creating that awareness. Next, you need to set a goal and develop a plan. I will be giving to you at the end of this session a form to fill out, and it's for you to do on your own. It's called an inventory of lifestyle needs and activity preferences. How many of you have been told that you need to jog to be fit, you have to run to be fit, and you can't stand to run? And you're not even physically capable of running. Walking will get you there. There's a whole list of activities that will help you determine what you like to do. If you like to be with a group of people, you're not going to go out and walk on your own. If you need support a group support, you may want to go with a group. This will help you determine what your needs are, the activities that you like, and then at the end to prioritize them, and then there's a self-contract, taking into consideration your needs and activity preferences. But the thing is to set a goal and a plan. And then there are agencies within the community that might help you in developing your plan. If you decide you want to exercise, or if you're currently exercised and you may need some help to improve your fitness, there are agencies that can help. In Tacoma, where I live, we have the YMCA that is beginning to do fitness assessments. We have corporations that are developing wellness programs. I think Weyerhaeuser Corporation is doing it. Boeing has a fitness center. The Tacoma School District has a wellness committee and program where we sponsor fitness appraisals, counseling. They did a smoking cessation. We had a wellness lecture series to help make people aware, to get them into even starting exercise plans or becoming aware of their wellness. Doctors and physicians' offices are becoming involved with fitness. Mary, will you explain kind of some of the work that you've done with what the hospital did? Okay, I just wanted to say that, but it started out as a hospital benefit employee program, and then it spun off into different corporations.
Just that in and of itself is not really cost effective for a number of years. Now, these sort of studies have been done in the past. The Cooper Institute's done some heavy-duty studying with wellness programs and how long it takes them to become cost-effective for corporations. And over a period of time, they do become cost-effective because the people within the corporation become more physically fit, they lose less time in their work, and so, you know, over a period of time, it does become beneficial for the corporation to support the program. Right away, it doesn't. So in order to become cost effective for our hospital, we achieve some marketable products that we can take into the community, like Karen does, we'd go into the school district and screen their people and give them the same stuff that we give our hospital employees, only we don't provide for them the individual counseling and a place to exercise. We turn it back to them and say this, we can give you these evaluations of your people and tell you how to do it yourself, and then in essence make them independent of us. And we've done that with some smaller, just groups of lawyers, or even larger corporations. We've been dealing with the Tel Northwest and Chevron Chemical people and things like that, larger corporations who are interested in it. And then they take it back within their own corporation and achieve their own purpose.
Okay. Thank you. I also have with me to hand out to you, it's called a self-motivation assessment and determination of likely adherence to exercise. It helps you evaluate yourself and gives you a little bit of self-knowledge of whether you're going to be, can follow through with an exercise program on your own, or if you have think you might have a tendency to be dropout prone to exercise. When you determine that, you may decide, well, maybe I need some help. Where do I go get that help? If you fill this out and you would like to discuss it with me again, and maybe we together, we could come up with some sort of plan that when you get back home, how to get started, what are some resource people that you could go to within your community? It's interesting to do, and again, it's for your own self-knowledge. And it will help you in determining whether you can go out and just start it on your own, or if you may need some extra encouragement. The next step is to make a commitment. For you, choose the best time of day. Whatever is the best time of your day for you to exercise, make that time the time that you're going to exercise. For myself, 6 o'clock in the morning is the best time for me to go out and run. I don't always have that option because I at home I have to get up at 5 in the morning if I want to run before my husband leaves for work. He leaves at 6 o'clock, so 6 o'clock is not the best time. So I have to juggle my schedule during the weekdays to find a time for myself to run. If you feel the best at 8 o'clock in the morning, that's the best time. Sometimes people like to run right after work. What I'm saying is when you begin to exercise and you're just starting a program, choose the time that is best and make that a priority. May not have to be a priority forever, but at least for a 3 to 5 week period. I don't know if any of you have heard of William Glasser. He wrote the book Positive Addiction, and he backs up that statement that if you want, it takes 3 to 5 weeks to develop a positive addiction. And I know that it happened with my mother when she started exercising. It took her about 3 to 5, it took her about 5 weeks to really feel good and continue to exercise. And now it's a regular part of her daily life. It's a regular part of her lifestyle. In working with Tacoma teachers, same thing. The people that started out, that we saw 5 or 6 weeks later, that kept good records, they were exercising their 4 times a week or more, that they had a time of day, they had the most success with their exercise program. The other thing you need to remember and to being able to stick to that commitment is to start out slow. Another thing that we found out in our work with the Tacoma School District is that we did an activity questionnaire on the people, finding out how much they exercise, what they could physically handle. And most of the employees that we worked with thought they needed to exercise much harder than they actually had to. So we talked to them and worked with them to lower their intensity of exercise. Rather than jogging, go for a brisk walk when you're starting out. rather than, you know, if you think that you have to run a 7-minute mile and you become exhausted, you're going to think twice about going out the next day. If you're doing it in the morning, you probably turn over and go back to sleep because you're working too hard and it's too hard of work. Start out at a comfortable pace, something that you feel comfortable doing, and do it something that you like to do, because somebody else becomes fit swimming does not mean swimming is the right exercise for you. So if you're starting out, which means you also may want to try a variety of exercise, different exercises, till you find one, two, or three that you most enjoy. The other thing that we did find out, when you're starting out, try recording your progress. Some people don't need to, but something that we found out with school employees, some of the Tacoma City employees, those people, and we all, the person that I was working with did all the Tacoma firemen, we found that the people that did record their progress, what they did that day, how they felt, the intensity, what their heart rate was, how many calories they were burning per workout, the people that kept the best records were the people that were most successful in beginning and maintaining an exercise program. Yes?
I just have a question. I missed the beginning of your class, but when I have a question, usually, you know, something okay. In my mind, I just express it. Anyway, I see in this charts that kind of tells you how much a person should weigh according to their height.
Right.
That doesn't mean that means feeling good because you fit that those numbers. How do you feel about that chart?
Okay. If that is set in law and people are going out and going by their weights just by that, and they start weighing themselves every day, they become compulsive about it, I don't think that's very, for me, that's not healthy. But when it's combined with a measurement of body fat, and your percentage of body fat is healthy within that range, then it's a good indication, and it's a good chart to use. Some people, however, a lot of male athletes, they're overweight by the height weight charts, but their percentage of body fat is less than 10%, and they're extremely fit. So if that's the only thing that you're using, it may not be a real clear indication. It's a range, and it's most accurate if it's used with the percentage of body fat and with your body composition.
I have a question.
Okay.
According to those charts, your wife is in perfect shape. So how do you feel about those charts?
Oh, no!
That's not good. I just found out that she knows about those charts. Hardly Karen's best friend or not.
Yeah. thank you. In conclusion to what everything that we've discussed, you can actually have fun, find fulfillment, inner peace as you exercise your body. As you start out, you may be working so hard that you're not going to feel that way. But after you give yourself a chance, giving yourself some time to get established into that pattern, you may find not only are you going to find physical benefits, mental benefits, and you may find some spiritual benefits also. You can see it as giving yourself a gift every day. For everything that you give to other people, you're taking a very small portion of a 24-hour day to give to yourself. And that little bit of time that you may give to yourself may give you far more energy to give far more to other people and be of more service to other people. I see it, my daily run, as a time of strengthening myself. It's a time of prayer and a time that connects me with God. There's no other distractions during the day for me as when I'm doing that, as when I'm off alone doing on my run. So the forum now is open to more questions. Okay. Any questions about anything that we discussed? Yes?
If my cholesterol is normal and my weight falls onto the charts, does that mean that I shouldn't do any exercise?
No. No. Okay. Good question. If you want to maintain where you are right now, you need to exercise aerobically 3 times a week just to maintain for a 20-minute period. And that could be through gardening, it could be through walking, it could be through your occupation. I'm not sure. It depends on how you exercise, what you do. It could be even in yard work. But a person needs to exercise 3 times a week, steady and nonstop, just to maintain their level of fitness.
If I go through a wellness program and I test well in the wellness program, does that mean that I won't get illnesses or sick in the future?
No. It doesn't mean you won't, but the statistics do show that people do feel better. It shows that people miss less days of work. There was an article in the American College of Sports Medicine, a journal, Medicine and Science and Sports, that in October 1986, where they measured women who began exercise programs, and referring to the women, but because I cannot recall off the top of my head a study that's been done of men. But they showed the women that did comply with exercise programs. Complying mean that they recorded and they did exercise their 3-4 times a week, whatever they were going to do. They felt better and they missed less days of work.
That's good. The one part I was going to ask Karen somewhat relates that, because I'd like to live to be 120. It's so exciting. And yet again, I think there is life expectancies that have some factor, I assume. I know one of my doctor friends told me one day, he said, a lot of people, you know, drop dead in heavy exercise and running and so forth. But he explained to me, felt that lifespan was increased by regular exercising in spite of what expectancy tables might be. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, there is, as I bring it up, as because I think it's important that people understand that that's just one step towards being well, and that there is now data accumulating to indicate that, for instance, there's been some studies of heart attacks in runners, and what happens is that runners still get heart attacks, but not as many get them. They don't get them as early in their life. They don't get them as severely as they would have if they had been sedentary instead of runners. And so that there is some benefit to doing it that is just beyond feeling good. Not that's not a good reason to do it, but in terms of if you even look at osteoarthritis, which is the most common form of arthritis in the United States, people with that particular kind of arthritis feel stiff and painful in the morning as they get up, and they haven't made their joints move. As they walk around during the day and they kind of warm up, if you will, their joints don't hurt as much. And I think the same kind of thing carries forth then into the exercise in terms of allowing that joint to go through its range of motion, to secrete the lubricants that need to be secreted to make it work smoothly, to let the muscles and the tendons go through their range of motion. All of these things tend to build a healthier system and healthier functioning system, so that not only is it the feel good in the emotional sense of the word, but in a physical sense of the word, that's truly what happens as well.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for saying that. we're not talking just, you know, just running, because that does, runners do drop dead, but it certainly helps increase life expectancy. But running and exercise isn't the only way of doing it. There's diet needs to be in there, a reduction of stress, stretching, flexibility. There's a wholeness to the whole thing, and to say exercise has all the answers is not accurate. Is that?
Well, it ties in with what I have seen and what I have read about. And the other aspect that you talk about is reduction of stress, and I think for a lot of people, reduction of stress isn't feasible or possible. But how they manage that stress is a very manageable, a very approachable thing. And if you can teach me how to handle my stress better than the way I'm currently handling it, and what you've been talking about today is exercise is one of the manipulative tools I can use to do that with, then I think that's an advantage. Just as a stress management seminar, just as perhaps a yoga, meditative, stretching, any of those kinds of things can be utilized in terms of letting working the kinks of stress mm-hmm. out, which then fall into stress management, which I think is, you know, sometimes we can change our stress levels, but mm-hmm. frequently not.
Okay, good point. And going back to this, okay, about how can I live to be 120? What happens with exercise, and why exercise is one component that does help in increasing life expectancy, is because exercise can lower the resting heart rate. If you take the resting heart rate, this is just one component, one aspect. But if your resting heart rate gets lowered, then your heart's beating less times. And over periods of years, the heart that beats less, you know, it seems simplistic, could last longer. I think we have, schools have gotten to the point where they're educating the mind very, very heavily. And many people are having problems today because we have not done a very good job of educating people on how to become physically fit and physically active. I think of PE programs that I have worked in that I had a very difficult time with. They were teaching activities to become fit rather than stressing the fitness that will enhance sports. And a lot of physical education programs are using sports as a means to become fit, and it doesn't always work. The kids that are unfit sit on the sidelines consistently. So, anyway, with that, I would like to end the thank you for coming. Did we?
I had a comment on the physical. I'm a physical.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, because I know, and I have a set of exercises too. If any people, buddy does have back problems and they do see a physical therapist or a doctor, always go by what your therapist or physician says over any of these exercises. This is a self-motivation assessment. Again, if you have any questions on it, you'd like to talk about it with me anytime up until the 18th, please do so. This other one is inventory lifestyle needs and preferences. It gives you an understanding of you and your likes. Self-contract. And then I have another two, just for your information, approximate energy expenditures in popular physical activities compared to sitting and burning calories. It's a fun chart. And then a lot of people are afraid to start exercise programs. These are warnings and what to do about them. And it's just fun. It's just information to pass on to you. The American Heart Association has a lot of information. I brought pamphlets up with me. If you want to take any of these please feel free to look at these and just take them. Take whatever you want, whatever you think would be interest you. If you read it, get the information you want, pass it on, share it with somebody else. So anyway, thank you for coming.